Welcome to the Property Buyer Podcast. Join me, Rich Harvey, multi-award-winning buyer's advocate and CEO of Property Buyer, where we explore the world of real estate and help you make informed decisions about buying or investing in residential and commercial property. Our show features expert interviews, market insights, and practical tips for navigating the complex world of real estate. Whether you're a first-time buyer, a seasoned investor, or simply curious about the property market, our podcast is for you. Join us as we share our knowledge and experience and help you achieve your property goals. Welcome to another edition of the Property Buyer Podcast. I'm Rich Harvey, CEO and founder of Property Buyer. Now, today we're going to be talking about the eastern suburbs and getting some great insights into the eastern suburbs market. Now, the eastern suburbs of Sydney contain some of the most expensive real estate found in Australia. Think of suburbs like Point Piper, Vaucluse, Double Bay. It provides an enviable lifestyle, proximity to world-class beaches like Bondi, Vaucluse, and Double Bay. And it provides an enviable lifestyle, access to world-class beaches and more, and yet it's within easy distance of the city and the airport. It holds great appeal for aspirational buyers and those wanting high-quality schools for their children and those seeking a sense of community living amongst ultra-high-quality property. And yet it contains some also really affordable pockets and suburbs that are not as well known, such as Matraville, Little Bay or East Lakes. So what has been happening at the top end of the property market? And what's the outlook for this remainder of 2023? So to help understand what's happening at the ground level in the East, and particularly the prestige market, I have a special guest today, Ben Collier from the agency, to share his insights. Now, Ben has been operating as an agent for over 25 years and holds several sales records for many suburbs. So welcome, Ben. Great to have you on board today.
Good morning, Rich.
Fantastic. So Ben, we have a tradition with our podcast. We normally start with a thought of the week. And this week it is from an oldie but a goldie, Napoleon Hill, who said, "Whatever the mind of man can conceive and believe, it can achieve." Do you have a particular mindset like that, Ben? What's your sort of thought on that quote of the week?
Yeah, look, I try and surround myself with, and certainly on in the early days when I was a very impressionable young 18-year-old, I tried to surround myself with people who I felt were at the peak of their powers or the top of their game, because then I was exposed to what could be achieved. And also, I was exposing myself to best practice. And so I always found that when you think you're killing it, there's someone that's doing 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 times more than what you are. So you don't ever want to put a ceiling on what can be achieved.
Brilliant, love it. I love the fact you talk about surrounding yourselves with like-minded people and those, because I think it's great to have mentors. And I think if you surround yourself with, you know, limited people with limited mindsets, it can really hold you back versus those that are really going for it.
Oh, completely, but it may not necessarily just be in your spoken industry.
That's right.
It could be in other industries that inspire you or motivate you in a different way.
Exactly, yeah. Great thoughts. Thank you, Ben. So, Ben, just to sort of recap a little bit about your background, if I may, like how long have you been in the real estate game? How long have you been acting as an agent?
I need to update my profile. Well, you said 25 years. Yeah. I think it's closer to 32 now.
Okay, so, 32, there you go.
I was very fortunate that I came straight out of school and managed to convince the likes of James Dack and John McGrath to take me on straight out of school as an 18-year-old.
Brilliant, fantastic. And what was the appeal of real estate? What made you want to jump into that straight after school?
Look, to be frank with you, I was one of those kids that had no idea what they wanted to do once they finished their HSC. Mm. And for me, it was, my options were limited. It was digging holes or as it turned out to be real estate. Yeah. And I really enjoyed it. Yeah. I did get a slight exposure to commercial and industrial and commercial leasing and all, and that just didn't appeal to me, but residential did. Mm. And so I was very focused to try and get into the industry, but not just into the industry, but with those who I felt were pioneering at the time, which was McGrath.
Brilliant, fantastic. Well, you had a great grounding in that area. So let's jump into the eastern suburbs in your patch. What's happening particularly at the top end of the prestige end of the market in the east? Is it slowing down? Is it sort of bumbling along? Is it firing? Where would you say it's at the moment?
No, it's pretty solid at the top end, and I'm speaking generally. For example, if you look at waterfronts, over the last 10 years, year on year, we've seen less and less waterfront properties coming onto the market. Now, demand has not gone away. If anything, demand's increased.
Yeah.
And what we've seen is, as the prices have increased due to lack of supply, some people are deciding, well, I may as well stay here. Now, if it you'll only see one pop up nowadays if it's a deceased estate or, unfortunately, it's a marital separation. Even people who would normally look to scale down out of these homes are deciding that they may future-proof the home by putting in a lift or elevator.
Yes.
And staying there.
Mm-hmm.
As I said, we're seeing less and less of them. And that's had a material impact on other properties. It's created a sort of a ripple effect. And that has, where people who may have aspired to buy a waterfront can no longer find one, or find one that's perhaps even in their price range to the size of house that they would need for their family. And so that's steered those buyers back towards the likes of, say, Bellevue Hill. And so the Bellevue Hill market's a very deep market in terms of demand as well.
So what's entry price now for a waterfront in the East? Where would you say a buyer thinks they've got a healthy budget, where do they need to start if they want any kind of waterfront?
Oh, look, I'm not saying you can't get one for around $20 million or something like that, but I haven't seen one for a while.
Yeah, yeah.
But I would say comfortably your baseline's 30.
Yep. Your baseline's 30. Yeah, yeah. I mean, I've noticed as well the lack of listings is right across the board, but particularly in the prestige sector, it is very limited pickings at the moment. Very, very, very tight supply.
Yeah, I mean, you don't buy a waterfront because you have to.
Mm.
You buy a waterfront as a reward. I mean, the chances are that person's already in a very nice, beautiful home. So it's to reward themselves for their success and what have you. And there's the likelihood of them owning their existing home outright is pretty high.
Exactly.
So the jump's not as significant for some.
Mm. And tell me about how the eastern suburbs market has evolved over the last, say, two decades. I mean, we've seen obviously massive price growth in a very tightly held market. But tell me about how it's evolved, do you think, in the last couple of decades?
It's an interesting thing that I've had, because I've had three decades to observe it, I guess. I would say around the early 2000s, you know, we saw a lot of people working in the banking sector who had been doing very, very well in the late 90s, early 2000s, all of a sudden popping up and buying these homes. And not long after that, we also then saw the emergence of the Chinese market. And those two factors is really what fueled that top end to something that I hadn't seen for the decade prior.
Yes.
Right. Mm. And it was sort of the banking sector with the Chinese market coming in over the top, probably, I would say, in that sort of from 2008, 2010, in that zone, we started to see it really picking up from the Chinese.
Mm. And are the Chinese still prevalent as a buyer today? And I mean, obviously
local Chinese, most definitely.
Yeah, but with all the foreign taxes and everything.
Offshore Chinese, it's much harder for them. It's much more harder for them to move money around, and the optics around it is not as favourable to them. But certainly, the local Chinese market is still very solid.
Yes.
And if you have a certain style of home, that's, let's call it harbourside, which is new and contemporary, then you're bound to, I would say, half of your inspections,
right.
Half of those inspecting the property will be Chinese.
Yes, yep, great, fantastic. And to what extent is that top end of the prestige market impacted by consumer sentiment and interest rates?
Less interest rates. Sentiment is still a factor. But I would say the thing that does drive that market is what's happening in the equities market. Mm. Right now, the equity market is pretty solid. If we see a significant correction or tapering there, then if people aren't feeling as wealthy today as they were yesterday, then that may cause some reason for pause.
Yes, yeah, okay. Mm. And I sort of tend to find that interest rates have, you know, very marginal impact on those kind of buyers, because they're not mortgage. If they've got a $20, $30 million property, they're not going to get a $15 mortgage. Yeah.
Well, if we look at the prestige market pre-GFC, our interest rates were much higher then.
Correct.
And then when the GFC occurred in September of 2008, we saw the Reserve slashing rates aggressively, but that fueled the sub 3 market, but little was happening above 5.
Yes, yeah.
Right? Yeah. So yeah, it is a different marketplace. Yeah.
So you're fair to say the prestige market really, it runs its own race, right? You know, it's as you say, partly driven by share market activity, by, you know, large business deals, mergers and acquisitions, and that sort of thing. But it really runs its own race.
Yeah. I agree.
Okay. Another sort of cohort of the market I'd like to talk about is expats. Obviously, during COVID, we saw a lot of expats come home, and, you know, I can't remember the number, it was like 300,000 or something may have arrived back in the shores, and some have gone back, but a lot have stayed. Are you still seeing expats returning, and do you think that trend's going to continue?
Oh, look, there's always an expat coming home, irrespective of COVID. Do you know what I mean? Mm. But I think COVID was one of those generational events that was a global event that accelerated a lot of people's thinking around what do we want to do? What does our future look like? We had intended staying here 5 years. Maybe we bring it forward. All that type of thing.
Yeah.
But people's jobs change and responsibilities change around children and schooling, and there's always people looking to come back. Mm. So it's always a factor, but not quite to the degree that we experienced due to COVID.
Yeah, right. Okay. Yeah. Interesting. Tell me more about the other types of buyers that are coming into the East. Do you find it's majority of people, the buyers are more within the East, upgrading or moving and downsizing, or do you see a trend of buyers coming from out of area wanting to come into the East? Tell me the types of buyers you're seeing at your opens these days.
Oh, well, okay, there are a number of different markets. If we look at, for example, the downsizer market, the wealthier downsizer market. So typically, the wealthier downsizer market in the lower and upper North Shore, now that the kids are leaving home, they no longer need the large freestanding family home with a pool or possibly even a tennis court if it's up in North Shore, and so therefore decide to buy something in Paddington or Woollahra or in the east, somewhere like that. That's always been there.
Leaving the leafy burbs to come to the more trendy east.
Yeah. Indeed. Then you've got the families choosing to move. Normally that's as a result of their chosen schools for their children. So if they're attending a private school in the eastern suburbs, then generally they want to be closer in.
Yeah.
Although a lot of those schools nowadays are providing bus services specifically to those people, it's still a factor.
Yeah. Mm, okay. And what other types of buyers are you seeing? Are there any younger buyers trying to come into the market as well? There's sort of first and second home type buyers as well.
Yeah, look, but again, they tend to be already here. Mm. They're not from out of area as such. They're all, but most likely already renting in the area.
Yeah, yeah.
And then making the jump up from their rental into their own home.
And what about, I know in our business, we've seen people buying, obviously, multiple homes to live in. So they might have an eastern suburbs pad, and they might have something at Palm Beach or in the Southern Highlands. Are you seeing that sort of trend as well, where people are actually, they've got enough wealth where they go, you know what, I'm going to spend 3 days here and 4 days, you know, back in the east. Are you seeing that at all?
Oh, without mentioning names, look, I know a number of wealthy families who might live in Vaucluse, but own a very, very nice home also in Bronte, or they live in Point Piper and also own an apartment in Bondi Beach, you know, and they go between the two.
Great, even within the east, yeah.
I know people in Mossman that have got properties in Manly that they use as their holiday homes because they find, for them, Palm Beach that little bit too far when it comes to kids' sport and all those sorts of things, whereas Manly is still quite accessible to do what they need to do, whether it be work or kids' sport.
Yeah, perfect. Ben, I'd like to ask a little bit about some of the most memorable sales that you've done. Sort of, you can think back however you like, but tell me some of the most memorable property sales you've done, perhaps some records you've achieved, and
don't get me wrong, selling a very expensive home is obviously very rewarding, but for me Some of the sales that I'm most proud of were the really hard or challenging ones, or where we managed to come up with a strategy and narrative which was not the norm.
Yeah.
And it was successful. They're the things that I'm more proud of, okay, as opposed to something that sold for 30 million or something like that. I mean, it's like asking me which is my favourite children.
Exactly, you can't pick a favourite.
But no, it's the challenging ones where...
And where were those challenging sales? What suburbs were they in? What, tell me more about that.
It's all over. Like I mean, one of my proudest sales was one of which I've been on the record before saying, where I sold someone else's house so they could buy the house, and I did so for free so that they could buy the house that I had going to auction. And I sold that so that that would happen for my vendor. So I think that it's those types of things that excite me, I guess.
Yeah, fantastic. Okay, yeah. And are you seeing sales volumes, like over the last, say, 3 or 4 years, have sales volumes been stable, trending down, trending up? What's you seeing in terms of turnover in the eastern suburbs market at the moment?
Well, it's okay, so what... This probably goes into one of your next questions, but look, we're the thing that we're seeing at the moment, and I'm sort of probably answering this question ahead of time, but we were all expecting the beginning of this year to be far more challenging than what it has been. And that has been due to the fact that we're 30% down on listings compared to the same time of last year, which was unexpected. And I guess this is probably something that I've learned over the years, is sometimes don't feed too much into the headlines, right? And have an awareness, yes, but because we were all expecting this flood of supply, which hasn't happened. And as a result of that, we've seen a stabilization in a market that we all thought was going to be harder. Now, perhaps that flood of supply is ahead of us, but at the moment it hasn't happened.
I get asked all the time, Rich, do you think that this fiscal cliff is going to have a huge impact on the market? And my view is that a lot of borrowers have already saved up some kind of buffer. They should be able to weather the storm. Now, I think there'll still be some motivated vendors out there that possibly don't want to get stressed and will sell, but I'm not expecting to see blood on the street, Ben. I'm not expecting to see a flood of listings coming on the market.
I'm not saying I haven't had listing appointments with people that are saying, look, I think we'd like to sell and reduce our debt. I have had a few, but nowhere near to the degree that we're being led to believe is ahead of us. And I think that if someone was in that position, I would have thought they would be already speaking to their preferred agent of choice about selling already.
That's right.
Rather than waiting till August. That doesn't make sense to
me. Exactly. You don't do it last minute, you know.
No.
Yeah, exactly. Ben, I want to ask you a little bit about potential growth suburbs in the east. So if you can put a crystal ball in front of you and say, next 5 years, where do you think some particular pockets of the east have more potential to grow than other pockets, and maybe unpack why you think those particular suburbs have better potential?
When we see there are certain suburbs that move faster than a neighbouring suburb, and the neighbouring suburb may lag in terms of its growth compared to the next suburb. And that was very, again, I keep referencing the GFC because it was pretty recent. But I remember when around about 2011, 2012, we saw the top end recovering. And if you look at Paddington Woollahra, it was started to recover. But Centennial Park sat there lagging, hadn't moved. And then in more recent years, we've seen Centennial Park come into its own and starting to play catch up, because people recognise that, hang on a minute, if you look at a per square metre rate or what have you, there's a huge gap when it doesn't make any sense, when it's only the other side of Oxford Street.
Yeah.
So I think if you can look at that, whether that be North Randwick into Kensington or Kingsford, I think that for some buyers, they may start to feel they're getting priced out of those areas. And so inevitably they may choose to look at the next suburb being that next suburb south, where they offer value.
Okay. What's your prospects for Queen's Park, talking of being near Centennial Park? What do you think of Queen's Park as a growth area?
Yeah, I think that's been on the rise for some time. I mean, I think you get buyers that are specific to North Randwick, focus on Queen's Park. You've got buyers that aspirationally scaling up out of Bondi Junction into Queen's Park. The migration from people living in Paddington, Woollahra, who can't quite afford the size of house with a garden in that area, inevitably find their way looking into that market. I think that's been a very popular suburb for quite some time. I mean, it offers a lot. I mean, it's accessible to schools, the park's magnificent, transport's great. So that's been on people's radar for some time because we've seen a number of sales above 8 million in Queen's Park over the last 12 months.
And just moving away from the sort of more expensive parts of the east to, you know, the southern parts, so sort of Malabar, Matraville, Little Bay, what do you think of the prospects for that part of the eastern suburbs?
Oh, well, man, there's been some records broken there of late, which have been very impressive. Even if you were to compare those sales to property sales in Bronte and Tama, you know, obviously on the foreshore there. I think that with people's equity in their homes have risen quite dramatically in those areas. But that's top end. I think that rates will certainly have an impact under four.
Now, we've been seeing some buyers that, you know, say they've got a $3.5 million budget, and obviously they can't afford Vaucluse or Double Bay, and they're going, you know what, we actually see value moving sort of south of Maroubra, and we're getting some buyers into those, you know, Daceyville, Matraville, etc., those areas there, and they're doing really well. So, Ben, I want to ask you the key features that buyers look for in the prestige market. Help me get inside the head of a prestige buyer. What do these prestige buyers, when they come with their, you know, large budgets, what are they? What are the features they love, and what won't they will they not compromise on?
Look, as you go through certain price thresholds, there is a level of expectation that a house must have certain things. Whether that be views, or if it's a multi-level house, then it must have a lift. If it's three or more stories, then they start saying, well, where's the lift? You've got temperature controlled wine cellars, you've got media rooms. If it's on the foreshore, does it have a jetty or boat access? Those types of things, as you go up, they expect certain things.
Okay. How much are these buyers willing to buy something that needs renovation, or do the buyers just want it all done for them so there's just no hassle, they can move in and enjoy?
This is a very good question. I think we may start to see a gap between those properties that need substantial work and those that don't. I think people, generally speaking, are happy to do makeovers or change kitchens and bathrooms and surface things. But when you start talking major rebuilds and construction and structural changes and council, I think based on current construction costs, it's a, you know,
it's so difficult, isn't it? I mean, well, the construction costs are so high.
There was a very large house. These are good clients of mine that have just finished a very, very, very large home in Bellevue Hill. And the property is their industry, and they said I'd probably think twice about doing it again because it was a 7-year process.
Wow.
So you're designing a house today, right? If you think about it, for your family, 7 years and later,
the kids are through high school already.
They've changed. You know what I mean? They're like, so your needs have changed and evolved over that time.
Exactly.
And That's a huge distraction in one's life and one's marriage and one's family and all of those things. It's a very disruptive process. So I think for some, they may say, look, I may be paying a full price, but, you know, I get to move in.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I agree, I think you'll start to see buyers willing to pay a premium for the property that's all done and there's no hassle.
Well, I already see that now with the wealthier downsizer market in Woollahra Paddington.
Yes.
They really don't want the hassle and endure the hard labour of creating their dream home. If they can see that it's obtainable now, then they'll pay a full price.
And particularly going through council process, if you've got to extend walls or go up another level, and, you know, dealing with
it's a long process.
Councils is a nightmare.
And these builds now, when someone's doing it could be $20 million in construction costs. It's a big consideration.
Absolutely, a huge thing. Yeah. So, is there anything they won't compromise on? What about privacy? What about aspect? I presume some of these buyers, it's like, you know, we don't want an obstructed view of the harbour or the bridge. I mean, if they're going to pay a premium, they want to have that, right? Is that thinking correct?
Yeah, but again, it's all to do with these price thresholds.
Yeah.
Mm. One may be more willing to compromise, let's say in Bellevue Hill in the $20 to $30 million range. If they've got a glimpse, then that's great.
Mm.
Once you start hitting above 30, then they're less willing to make that compromise.
Yep. Yep.
And they can afford to be fussy.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, all price related. So tell me, do you invest in property yourself? And have you done well? And what's been your best investment in property so far?
Oh, look, this probably goes against what it is that I'm here for, and which is selling homes, but I regret selling my last home. I should have kept it.
There's always one of those, isn't there?
I think and the conversation I have with a lot of people where they say that very thing, you do what you think is right at the time so that you sell it so you're not as much in debt with the next place, but then with the fullness of time, you look back and thought, well, I could have kept it.
Exactly, yeah.
So
look at the amount of equity you would have made versus what it would have 100%. Cost you to hold it, you know? So you could have made millions of dollars of equity versus, you know,
they're more the regrets, I suppose.
Yeah, I understand. Okay, yeah, cool. So again, just thinking about the rest of the year for the eastern suburbs, how do you see the market playing out? Do you think we're gonna have,
I don't think it's gonna be an atypical year, Rich. Yeah. Like, I think, we were all anticipating, as I said, a far more challenging start. And I think what this first quarter could have done or may have done is reassure some people who were thinking about selling but thinking that the market's not as favourable as they would like, therefore paused on the idea of selling. But because they've seen what's just happened, we may see that supply increase at a time where we typically see less houses come onto the market. Because you, generally speaking, Q2 and Q3 are quieter periods. Mm. It's Q1 and Q4 that are the busier times.
Yeah.
Mm. Whereas we've seen an unseasonably low level of supply in Q1 this year.
Mm. Interesting.
So I think the normal patterns may change as a result of that.
Often, if I was selling a house, I would probably do it during winter, because there's not as much competition.
100%, and that's normally that what dictates our advice.
I think you're absolutely right. I think this year is, every year is unusual. There's always an X factor, but I agree with you. I think that now the Reserve Bank has paused rates. I think if there's going to be one more rate rise, it will be next month. Otherwise, there won't be any more rate rises, and hopefully that will give vendors and buyers confidence that the market has stabilised. And I think we should start to see a more normal sort of trade of buyers and sellers coming to the market over the year.
Yeah, look, but I also remind people that all these factors that we talk about that influence the market are always going to be there, whether they be up, down, sideways.
Mm.
But life doesn't stop. You know, your wife falls pregnant or your partner falls pregnant and you, we've got to buy a bigger house. You know, your kids all move out of home. We need a smaller house. Unfortunately, you and your partner split up. We need to sell. You know, there's a deceased estate. There's always a reason for someone to trade property, right?
Yeah.
There's always going to be that. However, what does influence us and what we advise potential sellers, it's all about, is right now a very busy time with competing stock that would be competing against your home? Because if there is a lot of properties, then there's going to be a dilutionary factor, then therefore now's not the time to put that house on the market.
Yeah, right.
Because it's not about the agent, it's about your client.
Exactly. And just thinking about the client, obviously we look after buyers, you look after vendors. How have you found your interactions with buyer's agents over the years? Do you think they play a good role? What has been your experience in that area?
I think they have a very valid service, and also they have relationships with all different agents, and there is an underlying off market, particularly in the upper end. It's probably the preferred method of choice.
Exactly.
Is selling an off market due to discretion and all those sorts of things. So there's that element to it all. Sometimes some people have an analysis paralysis and therefore need their hand held, and they need someone to be saying, look, have you considered this property for these reasons? Because you do at times see some buyers in the marketplace for 3 and 4 years. You know, and if you were pre-COVID and then you bought last year, you bought at the peak when you should have bought before COVID.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
So yeah, I think some people overthink things.
Totally, yeah.
And so therefore your assistance really guides them through that minefield and and different agents with different methods and all of those things.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we one of our pitches for our service is we speed up the whole searching process, we uncover off-market properties, we give them confidence, we give them all the details to make a wise property decision. And like you, it's not about just closing a deal, it's about making sure the client is number one in the transaction and they get what they want for their budget at 100%. The end of the day. And you know, we probably speed up the process, and our average turnaround time is around about 1 to 2 months. If a client comes to us with an expectation of buying a property and we know we can achieve it, we normally have a 6-month agreement on paper, but the actual reality is within 1 to 2 months they're signing a contract to purchase their property. And they're just so much happier. They go, wow, I couldn't have done it without you. Wish we'd come to you 3 years ago. You
know? Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
You know, so it is, yeah. So, Ben, last question for you for today. This has been great. What's your best property tip that you can share with our audience today?
For a seller or a buyer?
Whatever, either.
Well, from a seller, you get one shot to make a first impression.
Yeah.
Mm. Right? And you want to feel at the end of that process that between you as the seller and your agent that you've done as much as you can, whether that be presenting the home, making the home available to the way you market the home, all of those factors, you want to feel, well, look, we couldn't have done anything more, so therefore what's on the table is worth considering, right? That's probably the most important thing.
Fantastic.
You don't want to be having regrets.
Exactly, yeah. Ben Collier, thank you so much for joining
us. It's a pleasure.
We've been talking to Ben Collier from the agency. Thank you so much, Ben. Been a pleasure. Look forward to catching up again soon.
All the best, mate.
Thank you. Well, thanks for being with us on the Property Buyer Podcast. We hope you enjoyed the show. If you have any questions or would like further information about buying a property, please visit propertybuyer.com.au and we'd be delighted to help. We have loads of free resources and market updates and recent articles for you to explore. We look forward to joining you on another episode very soon. I'm Rich Harvey. Thanks for listening.